All right. Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. We are a show that is dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. And we're here twice a week. We're here every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Central Time. And we are, of course, here today, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. So shalom, peace and blessings to everybody. I hope you're all having a great, blessed Holy Week. Good Friday is this Friday. We have church services this Thursday evening, Monday, Thursday. And then, of course, you have Friday service, and then you have Sunday service. So it's always this is always a kind of blessed time of the year. I wanted to start off tonight. Today's topic is a tale of two cities. We're going to be talking about, of course, we're going to be talking about Jerusalem and Mecca and the evidences for these two cities. But before we did that, I got a call last night. We didn't do the show today. I got a call last night and was told that my dad had passed away, and they were found him. He was sitting in his chair, his computer chair there, doing what he loved. And they're not sure if he had a heart attack or what the deal was, but he was 80, oxygen. He was tethered to that house. The quality of life was not all that great. I am grateful that I did go to go out and see him last month for about a week, and did speak to him on Friday. So, you know, you don't have regrets of not, you know, reaching out to your parents when they pass away. Because I remember when my mom had passed away, it had been about a month that I had spoken to. It was actually her birthday. Her birthday was in early April, and she died in late May. But with this, I don't have any regrets. So I would just ask that pray for me, my family, and how we deal with it. So anytime you lose a parent, you have to go forward and deal with all. Uh-oh, sounds like somebody's got a hot mic there. And take care of all those details. Oh, go ahead. What's up? Darcy, do you want to add something? Yeah, I appreciate that. I was saying earlier that, you know, you expect these things to happen because he was older and not in good health for quite a while. But you're never really able to accept it when it happens. And it is kind of tough. So we appreciate that. He lived a good life. What is really edifying for me is that there was a time period, and I've shared this with Paul before, where him and I, we didn't speak for 12 years. After my mom and him had gotten a divorce, things were very bitter between him. He thought I had taken sides during the divorce, and it was always confrontational. And every time I'd call, he would take my call, or he would always say things that, you know, were not, you know, anyway. So we just stopped talking. And then a couple years ago, we patched things up, and I started to actually go out to Kafiristan West and started visiting him, you know, 2-3 times a year on the last couple of years. And it's just good that you settle these issues before they pass on. So, all right. So, what are we going to be talking about today? Today we're going to be talking about A Tale of Two Cities. I was in the clubhouse room this afternoon because I have no life again. And I think Dr. Kufar Phobia mentioned that Kenny was there, and he was babbling his mouth about a hadith. And, you know, and the guys were amazed because he started discussing his debate with David Wood. And, you know, you sit there and he evidently wants to have another debate with David. And he's actually emailed me. He goes, "Yo, I have my trap set for him." You know, how do you respond to something like that? You know, I've had my trap set, Kaffer Smith, for 2.5, you know. Yeah, and that's it. It was just he doesn't realize how big of an embarrassment because when you do these debates, you tend to kind of you overlook your shortcomings. But when you get completely wiped out, I don't know how you reconcile that. I don't. You have to have some type of psychosis going on. I don't want to try to generalize. About what? Oh, I don't know if he was crying. If I was him, I would have been crying because he got wiped out. I understand. Right, because he was trying to just say, okay, well, those hadith are wrong, and my hadith where I have to put, you know, this little picture graph together like a flannel graph to come up with these dates is the right one. You know, forget all the history, forget all the beliefs of the majority of the Muslims worldwide. I'm right and they're wrong. But he took the debate. He took the debate because his ego, it's a popularity thing with him. He wanted to boost his popularity. And if you're, you know, what greater way to boost your popularity than engaging with David Wood? That's gonna boost your popularity. But I tend to agree with that. So let's take a look at this tale of two cities that I'm going to be talking about today. If you guys have anything to chime in with, you know, please, by all means, post to chat, come up on mic. Okay, so let's go ahead and let's just get some basic facts out of the way here. And I didn't prepare a PowerPoint because I was bugging this out, and I was just kind of putting my down on paper, and I didn't feel like I'm reading over PowerPoint, and I apologize, but I do have pictures that are listening to people talk. But when we look at culture all across the globe, they're always interested in doing archaeology. And the reason why they're interested in doing archaeology is because they're always interested in their country or their culture's past. They always want to see what the roots of that culture was. They always want to share and expound upon those roots. They want to, because it gives them a sense of credibility, not only on the world stage, but also in the sense of personal edification, where they say, okay, well, my country has a culture, and this is the culture right here. And when you look at the cultures, this isn't just the American culture; it's just not Western, but it's Eastern cultures also. All of them want to dig up, or at least look and see what is underneath the dirt where people had lived before. Let's go ahead and take a look at, let's just begin with Rome or Italy today. This is a picture of the Roman Colosseum built by the Jews that carried out of Israel, by the way. And it is still standing there today. This part right here, in the middle, I don't know. Can you guys see my arrow on the screen there? I don't know if you can or not. Anyway, this part right here. Okay, well, the part in the center is a series of subterranean tunnels and hallways. And where you look up here where they built a floor. Okay, where you look up here where they built this floor, that's where the original floor was and extended across there. And that's where they would, you know, have the, if you watch the movie The Gladiator, where they're coming up out of the floor on an elevator type structure. And it's still there today. You can go there today and you can see that this goes back to 70 AD. There's other places in Rome itself that they've gotten down and they've dug up. And you have even the tile that was laid down at that time is still there, and you want to see what the type of art was in style at the time. And sometimes these tiles present stories that give hints or clues to what was going on at the time. And then you have huge digs like this, and this is the amphitheater. It's not as big as the Colosseum, of course, but they were built all over Italy during this time, and the Roman Empire. There was one in, I was in Corinth, Greece, a number of years ago anyway, where they have an amphitheater, and they dig up, and they find all kinds of things that are laying around, you know, coins. They find pottery shards. So it gives you a clue to what the people did and believed at the time. You look, of course, the most famous is the Egyptian artifacts, where they do archaeology. And the most famous ones for Egypt, of course, are the pyramids. And the pyramids, you can see on the outside, used to be this really tight protective layer on all of the pyramid. They were built with these mud bricks. But outside of them, it was like glass. I don't say it was glass, but they were so tight, water could not permeate into these things. So they're absolutely massive structures, archaeological wonders, and they were buried for centuries. And recently they've come out and they've unearthed entire cities like this one in Egypt. Let me get up here and pull this down quicker. A place called Avaris. Steve, welcome back to the show, Steve. So this in Egypt, this is a whole city that was dug up. The Egyptians are trying to look at the root of the city are and what the origin was like, give them an understanding of what their history is. And then you get down here to, okay, this is just gives you an idea where it was. It's up here in the Nile Delta, this Avaris is. Then you have Greek. Of course, you have the Acropolis that sits high on Mars Hills here, and you have all kinds of archaeological digs that go on in the Acropolis itself and down below on Mars Hill and throughout the entire city. As a matter of fact, Greece has these cities all over the countryside where they've dug up ruins from 2,300, 2,400 years ago. And they, when they had the Olympics a couple years ago, they were digging up, doing so much building and construction. They were digging up caves. They were digging up pottery. They were digging up all kinds of, I think this is an oil lamp of some sort with fine relief in it, coins. And so you see all the rings. You see all those things. And it got to the point where they had to put they found so many artifacts that they ran out of room in the museums. And they had to start putting building displays in the subway stations. So as you're going through the subway stations and you're looking at, as you're standing around, you could at least look at some of the past archaeological digs or things that they had dug up from, you know, 2,000, 2,500 years ago. So that was pretty interesting. So you have that in Greek culture. The Chinese even have had archaeological digs where they've dug up this very famous army of, I can't remember what this is called. Paul, do you remember what this is called? What do they call them? Terracotta. There you go. I couldn't remember exactly what. Yeah, terracotta soldiers. So you have all this being dug up and certain relief into the sides of buildings that that were carved up, and they want to know what's there. They keep digging up. One in South America, down in Peru, Mogi Picchu or whatever this is called, built in high in the Andes Mountains. My wife is going there here in about a month and a half or so. She's going to be traveling down there with her and her friend are going to go hiking. Who would want to go hiking in the mountains? The steepest mountain range in the world. Are you crazy? That's the queen of the Kafiristan. Okay. And then, of course, I've been there. Look at this guy, all 150 pounds of him, sitting around the mud brick there in look at this. It was miserable hot. But this is some of the things that they have unearthed. Real quick backstory. This girl right here. Can you guys see where my mouse is? This girl here. Okay, she was selling. I still have the pamphlets. She was selling pamphlets to the city of Babylon. And I can't remember if she was selling them for $2 or it seems to me like they were $2. And she was selling them in different languages. They were in French, German, Italian, Chinese or whatever. And she's trying to sell me this thing. It was in Chinese. I was like, I can't read it. And she can't understand English. And then finally she brought one out. It was in English. So I gave her you know, I think $20. I gave her $20 for it. And she's just a poor girl. And, you know, her dad has her out there selling these things. And she's like, no. $2. I'm like, I'm giving $20. And she goes, no. And finally, dad comes over and wants to know what's going on. He sees, I said, I just want to give this as a gift, you know, to you and your family. And he's like, oh, yeah, never mind. I was like, get over there, girl. Take the guy's money and leave him alone, okay? But anyway, kind of cute little story. And there was also, I have a piece of pottery. I don't know if I should say that on you. I'm going to say it anyway. There was a kid that was selling pottery because they didn't have any control over the site anymore. So people were just going in there and picking things up for themselves and making whatever money they could. And the kid comes and shows me a piece of pottery about that big. And it's got some relief on there. You can see it's, you can tell it's really old. And I said, I'll give you $1 for it. And he goes, no, $5. I'm like, no, how about $2? And he goes, no, $5. And I said, okay, this guy's driving hard. How about $4? He goes, no, $5. And I'm like, okay, so it's sitting in my cabinet out there. It's probably worth quite a bit more than that. But anyway, it's people dug this stuff up, and they dug it up for a reason. They wanted to know what the ancient past taught or would tell them. And if you go in, oh, this is what we were discussing on Sunday. Remember Kent Hovind's dragons? It's the 40, I put 1 hour, 40 minutes. It's the 40-minute time spot, not 1 hour. I don't know why I put 1 hour, 40 minutes. It's the 40-minute time spot. But these are dragons that Hovind was talking about. But this is, you know, 3,000, 2,500 years old, for crying out loud. And it's still sitting over there in the sands of Babylon. And then Nineveh, which is up by Mosul, which I spent some time up there. You had these statues, which are from the Assyrian Empire, and Sargon II, who is the father of a guy by the name of Sennacherib. And if you remember Sennacherib was the one that laid siege to Jerusalem and Hezekiah's... King Hezekiah, and this is where he lost his entire army. And this is Sennacherib Palace that they have unearthed. They've dug this up. This is an actual archaeological dig in Nineveh. It's right next to Jonah's tomb. And if you get down in there, you can see where they have these carvings into the walls of structure that are, these are 2,800 years old, for crying out loud. The reason why I did that, I just want to point out the fact that I wanted to show something else. I wonder if I could get this. Is this still up? Where did it go? I still got it here. Let me drag this over. We went for a walk. We were in Jerusalem, the one to Hezekiah's tunnel. So let me show this again. Okay, so this is Hezekiah's tunnel, and we walked right through. Can you guys hear that? You can hear that? Okay, is it too loud? Turn the volume down. I'm sorry. But we're walking down steps, and we're walking down these steps, and this tunnel takes you down to where they have a stream going through Jerusalem. This is how Jerusalem held out so long, is because they had water. And we walked in this water, and it takes you out to the Pool of Siloam. The water's cold, by the way. Pitch black. You could not see anything. Cool. When we're walking through here, the guy that was the tour leader, he had everybody turn off their lights. We had all flashlights and such. And it's just pitch black. You can't see anything. He started singing, "Our God is an awesome God." It was just awesome. It really was. Where's the sound coming back on? There we go. But you see, the water was anywhere from maybe ankle deep all the way up to right above the knees. But anyway, okay, that I'm trying to make, let me go ahead and pause. Let me pause. Okay, what I'm trying to make here is that everybody, include Jerusalem. And notice how I tied in, is that on here? If you have known history, notice this, you have known history from a guy by the name of Sennacherib. Sennacherib is a historical figure. Why? Because they have dug up his castle, his palace in Nineveh, which is Mosul, Iraq. He plays this character that is talked about in First Kings, I believe it is. It's in the Book of Kings, where he is attacking, laying siege to Jerusalem. You have King Hezekiah having a tunnel built to have this, knowing that this attack is coming, that is still there today where you can actually walk through it. It takes you to the Pool of Siloam, which is a known biblical place in the New Testament. So here you can clearly see that inside Jerusalem and outside Jerusalem, we have archaeological evidence that contributes to the credibility of the Bible. And that's the main point I'm trying to make here. We can clearly see that every civilization wants to go ahead and unearth their history. You want to know things, because what is that? That lends credibility to the veracity, number one, of your history, but number two, to show what a great nation you truly are. Look how long we've been around. Look how long we've had these things. But there's one reason that doesn't do that for some reason, and I'll give you a guess which one it is. But what I want to do is I want to show you what I did on a quick Google search. I did a quick Google search. And what I did here, hold on, is I noticed what I saw for archaeological evidence for Jerusalem. So here you have the first hit is this thing that talks about how the wall, one of the Jerusalem's wall, is dated 586 BC and the siege of Nebuchadnezzar and the carrying off of the southern kingdom into the Babylonian captivity. And if you look at some of these other ones, archaeologists find evidence for biblical siege of Jerusalem. Notice it says evidence, more evidence for Babylonian destruction, 2,600-year-old. Archaeologists search Jerusalem evidence of quake. Surviving evidence of the second temple is there. And Dominic was here a couple weeks ago, and he talked about a wet sift that they went through. And look at, you know, you have the evidence about the destruction. This is readily available. You know, the three sieges of Jerusalem. Yeah, I mean, this is all available for anybody who wants to look. It's right there. And when you look at this, as I mentioned before, I was supposed to watch it then. You can see it, that people can actually go there, touch it, walk in it, know that the Bible is true, or that at least those stories that are being told in the Bible about those specific events have the type of evidentiary value behind them. It isn't something that, you know, we just made up. And, you know, we said that, you know, that we lived in the pink kingdom surrounded by white clouds and in an elevation of 15 million feet for our religion. And it's not only written about in our theological literature, but it's also written in secular historical literature. Let's take a look. You guys want to see what, when I do the same thing and I remove Jerusalem and put Mecca, you guys want to see what that looks like? Who wants to see what that looks like? Let's, my what? Okay. Oh, when I do the tags or the yeah. Okay. Yeah. I went to try to do that earlier in the show, tried to log on to YouTube, and it wouldn't let me on for some reason. Maybe my account's been suspended. Okay, well, all right, I'll pop them in when I get done. Okay, well, I want to jump over to BTR. Okay, we're getting over 1,000 hits or downloads a week, or over 500 per show. Is it? I wonder, is that coming from? I mean, they've removed the filters or something, or did you have something to do with that? All right, we'll keep it down low. All right, so let's go take a look and see what they came up with when we looked for archaeological evidence for Mecca. Now look at here. Saudi experts set to uncover secrets of ancient trail to Mecca. I feel like I'm for Muhammad, not to Mecca. Second one, there's no archaeological evidence suggests Mecca is an ancient town that existed before the Christian era. It existed before. Okay. Glimpse into the archaeological history of Mecca has wiped out. Saudi. Okay. This is where is the other? Okay. So this is from that article. So Saudi Arabia's hidden history will be waiting to be discovered underneath the sands. The secret one ancient trail are being the secrets of one ancient trail are being come to help of archaeological, archaeological. Iron rock at a time. There we go. Okay, the Zubidibidi Yabadabadu Trail in the Kufi pilgrimage. Okay, notice this is the pilgrimage route, a pilgrimage to where? Mecca? Okay, do we have any evidence that there was a pilgrimage in Mecca in this, prior to the 7th century? And the quick answer is no. Okay. So look at this. In a rock engraving date back 10,000 years. Notice they have rock engravings date back to 10,000 years. Burial mounds, wells, rocks, pottery, glass, metals, currencies, all on this trail to Mecca. Notice that there's nothing in Mecca. Or is that just me? This is the road that runs north of Mecca all the way to Babylon. So this is a long road, right? Well, it's a route that was supposed to be used between Mecca and Babylon is what it's supposed to be. North of Mecca. It's north of Mecca. Well, it went both ways. It's a trail that was supposed to go from Babylon to Mecca and then back up. So it's like all roads. You can go either way on a road. It doesn't have to be. But the fact is, now here's the evidence right here. Look at this rock inscription, what it says. Notice when it's dated. A recent discovered rock description from the Taiyate 78 AH. So this is like 700 AD. So this is, we're in the 7th century. Connie, you're in a one-story there. No? Say that, Paul. Which coin is that? This is this rock face here where it's, hold on, it's this rock face. This is a rock face. But the problem is that this is not in Mecca. This is outside of Mecca. And it could go anywhere. You know, you can make the argument that, well, it's going anywhere. Look at but this is what does it say? Did it even say what it says? It says, Okay, but it says we're going to mention the Al-Masjid Al-Haram, a likely reference to the Kaaba. Okay, so 78 years after Hijra, which in the 7th century is your first evidence for anything that mentions Mecca. Okay, fine. Where is the evidence for Mecca, though? That's the problem. That's the problem. Why aren't we doing archaeology there? And hold on. I got plenty of pictures of that coming up. Okay, what page am I here? I'm on page 22. Okay. So let's look at some of the other sites that come up on the first page of a Google search here, archaeology. Ancient sites of the Islamic world are being destroyed. So it doesn't think about how there's archaeological evidence for Mecca. It's just talking about the archaeological evidence is being destroyed. Well, how do we know it's being destroyed? Well, we don't know it's being destroyed because we don't know if it's there to begin with. Why don't we know where to begin with? Because it's being destroyed. Archaeology in the early history of Islam, the first 70 years, Muslims was not Mecca, B site in northwestern Arabia. I went to, I think it was it, and all it was this laundry list of, it was like bibliography. I think that's what I went there in it. Anyway. Okay, and let's see. Survey mapping, nothing. There's no archaeological evidence, it's just Mecca is an ancient town. So here's an article about archaeological heartbreak. How precious ancient sites of Islamic world are being destroyed. Well, why are they being destroyed? Because you're building an entire city on top of them. You're cementing over them. Let's see. The Kaaba has been encircled. Is it being encircled? It used to be encircled by those porticos. They tore those down in 2014 to build the walkway going through the mountains of Safa and Marwa. But all the places where they've cemented over, all these sites, all these places are recently built. I mean, here's the walkway between Safa and Marwa. Here's the Kaaba. All of these places around here, over here is like where Muhammad's birthplace was supposed to be, or Khadijah's grave is supposed to be, one of the two. I can't remember how it goes. But they're all cemented over. There's nothing there because the only way I could do it red is if I was on PowerPoint. I'm not on a PowerPoint. I'm on just a Word document. Sorry. Yeah, sorry. It's kind of hard to see. Yeah. Go ahead, Rad. Right. Whose grave? Are you at the train station, Rad? Let me mute him. Okay, I muted him. Rad's in a train station, I think. Okay, make sure nobody has a gun for crying out loud. Crazy. Yeah. Yeah, well, when we were looking, okay, go ahead, because that's just killing my ear. Thank you. Okay. Turn this down. It's hurting my ears. Okay, so the bottom line is that you have a culture group of people that are not interested in at all at preserving their history. They're not interested in all of using evidence to demonstrate the veracity of their history. This then – and that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Any culture, I don't care which one, you would be looking for all kinds of things to demonstrate the historicity – there's that word for you, Paul – the historicity of your culture, of your religion. Every time somebody finds something in Jerusalem that – because they just found, was that there was a video Rad had put out, a curse, one of those curse scrolls, the curses that we find. Right. They went back in and they did some thing, and they found one of these cursed scrolls that matches Deuteronomy. This is 3,000 years old, guys. This is about as exciting as you could possibly get. Here you have evidence directly linking Deuteronomy. I mean, please. I mean, you can't help but if you're a historian and you have no life like I do, that you get excited about stuff like that. And you love reading about stuff like that because that lends credibility, more credibility, to your the biblical narratives. It's, oh, it's been corrupted. We don't know. That's wrong. That's somebody changed it. Shut your mouth. Every time somebody turns over and makes a discovery in the Holy Land, it just provides more proof that the Bible is right. And some of these chronologies that some of these people come up with are wrong. Okay, so... that's all I had. I thought I was going to go long on that, but I guess it didn't take all that long. Yes, sir. Yeah, Steve. Do you think that they were? I mean, did you guys actually? Okay, and I cannot accept the fact that people think that the rest of the world is that dumb. Who's got a hot mic again? What's that? Because by building over this, you're destroying and for your religion. You would want to edify the flock, to strengthen people's faith, show evidence for archaeological evidence. I would hope you would anyway. Right. And that's here's their excuse. Idolatry. This is why they went in and destroyed all of those, that stuff that I'm showing you from Nineveh. They went in and destroyed all of that. The ISIS went in and destroyed that. They went in and destroyed the tomb of Jonah. They went in there and destroyed all of that. Why? Because they said that in Israel. That's kind of a hot, that isn't that in Nablus or someplace where it's, West Bank, the Tomb of the Patriarchs. Now, there we go. Okay, Nablus. Well, I think you guys are absolutely right. You know, you either, okay, the problem is that you don't have any archaeological evidence for a 7th century Mecca. So what do? You cover it up. And this is, I honestly believe this is exactly what they're doing. They've had 14 centuries. Well, the dating of the religion, go back to 14 centuries. I'm going to go ahead and mute him. But they've had, you know, over, what has it been? Since they've been getting all these petrodollars, for crying out loud, they've had over almost a century now of, 50 years anyway, of getting all of this money from the West. So they had the money to go in and excavate this to demonstrate that these things that supposedly happened in the Quran or the Hadith are true, but they don't. And it isn't just Mecca itself that is showing that this isn't true. It's the Qiblas. Extensively about the several different Qiblas that were unearthed from looking at ancient mosques in the 7th century, the 6th and the 7th century, and none of them point towards Mecca. So if they're not pointing towards Mecca, then you have a second part of this equation. Okay, number one, we don't have any archaeological evidence for Mecca, and any archaeological evidence that we did have, could have had, should have had, has been cemented over. Number two, now we have evidence that it's not Mecca. Why? Because these earliest Qiblas do not point towards Mecca. So here you have two essential archaeological bits of data that are exceedingly strong. And then if you get in the Quran itself, it mentions Mecca just one time. One time. Doesn't mention Jerusalem at all, but it mentions the places like Thalmud, which is way up north, Ad, which is way up north. So it mentions other places, 30 and 40. I have the book back here. Hold on. Let me turn around and grab it. So the manuscripts, it says the Valley of Becca is mentioned once, Medina is mentioned twice. Okay, hold on, I'm looking. Okay, 396, it says the Valley of Becca, and then in 4024, it says the Valley of Mecca. Okay. No, I'll bring it up. Let me bring it up. Okay. Let me, 4824. He can stop for Krina. 4824, I'm bringing it up right now. Okay. All right. Here you go, Steve. Steve, it's on your screen. It's on your screen, Steve. I can try. I know what it's like. Okay. Okay. That's one time. Woo. Connie now. Woo. You got one time. All right. Way to go. If you're only going to, we're on. Even if you are, they mention it one time in their entire holy book. Now they say the Masjid al-Haram, how many times is that mentioned? Well, if you look at the mention, number of mentions, okay, it says here from, again, I'm going to plug Dan Gibson's Quranic Geography. This is a gold mine, a treasure trove of information. If you look at the Gospel of Luke, it has 27,000 words. It mentions 31 different locations at 110 times. The Quran has 149,000 words compared to 27,000 and mentions only 9 locations 65 times. times. 149,450. Adida. He's in Dina. Steve's out of his car. He went to get his laundry, I think. Yeah, he's okay, I'm just checking the number of mentions here. Yeah, hello sir. Welcome to the show. Let's see. Who is it? He's a MAGA hat wearing white supremacist, and he's a Christian. Okay, my computer's. I cannot understand what you're saying, dude. What is he getting? Okay, I'm going to mute him and then you guys tell me what he said. Okay. 38 in a mass shooting. Well, Glocks, I got a 40 Glock. I mean, they come in different calibers. That makes all the sense. Okay. Abandoned on Brooklyn Highway, 5 miles from shot 10 Stranger's gun was on FBI's terrorist radar until 2019. See here. Okay, so he was on FBI's terrorist radar in New Mexico until 2019, according to report, and was cleared after multiple interviews. Oh, are you a terrorist? No, at all. Oh, okay, well, then you can go. Yeah, I could see how it works out. Having public identified. He's on the loose. Investigators believe they know who he is had by the after finding a credit card. Okay. Finding a credit card at the scene and was all used to rent the U-Haul cargo van. Does that smell pass test? Let me commit a mass shooter and then drop my credit card. The same one that I rented the used to rent this back. Package. It's those bags. Well, see this. Okay, we were just this. That's the point I was going to make. The cameras, the entire camera system in that station work. Now, how does that happen? Exactly. That sounds. What do you mean he was a hacker? Any footage you see there, that's all cell phone. Yeah, that's cell phone for sure. That's not CCTV stuff. And I could just hear it, you just hear the same mantra now. We need to enact tougher gun laws. I mean, New York City, for Pete's sake. I mean, who has tougher gun laws in New York City? And then you're going to have people screaming for high capacity magazines. And Biden, Well, nobody owns automatic weapons anymore. He does. Did you have today? Hold on. We're just getting to that. You got it here, of course. I didn't know it was in there during the speech. So bogged down with doggone. I gotta make money, for Pete's sake. Well, you have to allow absentee ballots allow that for military. I mean, because I've been a few times absentee. Well, this is where they step this, because the Constitution clearly states that state legislatures are the only ones that have the authority to enact voting laws. It's not the governor. The governor has no authority to change it, and the state Supreme Court do not have the authority to change those laws either, under any circumstances. So when you had these states enacting outside of their legislature, absentee voters, mailing them out to people en masse like that, that's illegal. Every single electoral vote from that state should be voided because of that, the illegality that was involved in that. But it's never going to happen. Why? Because, well, we got Bite Me as our president who got pooped on today. How apropos. How poetic justice at its best. You're in the lockout state of all places, too. Okay, does anybody have anything else to add today? I'm kind of short on stuff. Okay. Let me get there. I'm lagging for some reason. Okay. What do we got? How do you defend claimed Isaiah 42:10, sing a new song, that new song is a new law being surrendered? Yeah, I... Okay, it also talks about, Isaiah 42 also talks about the cities of Kedar, Isaiah and Kedar, Isaiah and Kedar and Selah, yeah. Yeah. There was a guy that was doing a. There was a guy that was doing a stand-up comedy routine, and he was talking about pedophilia and the word pedophile. And he's saying, he goes, you know, a lot of people when you say they would be interested in young little girls or something, you'd call somebody like that the pedophile. But then he, you know, there are other different variances of this. There are something like an edophile is somebody who likes girls who have just initially entered puberty and but yet are not full women. And then there are those girls who have finished puberty and are yet very young. So those are all like a kenophile or something like that. But then he goes, this is what's so funny. He goes, but anybody that would bring that up, then they would think that you were a pedophile for even knowing those other definitions of what a pedophile or a pedophile. There are definite other variants within pedophilia. So, yeah. Oops. I sent him the link to the show. He was so bent on, yeah. I sent it to his Skype. Excuse me. I sent it to his Skype account. assume that he answers that. Maybe he has to wait for the sun. Maybe he has to wake up extra early. That's what I'm thinking. He's going to wake up extra early for Ramadan so he could stuff himself. And then he would come on. I thought he was in the Philippines. I mean, do you actually believe that guys like that honestly to themselves and they say, well, I schooled this guy, and they talk trash. Yeah, they're going to talk trash, okay? That they actually believe that, even though that they have to lie to them? I would like to think that the followers don't do what? I mean, I don't understand that. Why do you get people to follow you where you make a fool out of yourself every time you? I mean, right. it's not the right kind of fame that you want. It's the wrong kind of fame. Well, it came Sunday. I mean, he was in the chat Sunday barking about something, and I didn't even bother to read what it was. Okay. Well, I feel bad for people like that. Because number one, the guy is spiritually lost. And then when you demonstrate to him and show him, with clear evidences and clear lines of philosophical thought and reasoning that his arguments are, specious or fallacious, and then he still comes and says, well, I schooled you, and I feel terrible for people like that, because this is kind of like your Forrest Gump scenario where, he actually thinks he's a genius, but the fact is you're a blathering idiot. Nobody else around you is trying to tell you this, but yet you won't accept it. So I... Right. And I was just going right through my mind. Narcissist, yeah. Well, that guy that keeps trying to get everybody banned on Facebook, Marshall Gregory. He says he's a genius. Well, I don't know if this. Well, I just, you know. They what? I didn't hear what you said, Darcy. Oh. Who does bodybuilders, you said? Obviously. I don't have that problem. I don't have that problem. I look at her and I'm like, I can walk away. Get away from me. Look at you. Yeah, well, you know what students do. You know what students do now? They'll turn the camera on their computers, and they'll sit there and primp their hair, and you know, I'm like, God, turn the camera off. Let's go get some work done. Okay, we're gonna call it a night, guys. I got 6:30 time. We've gone an hour and a half, which is normally the time we go. I just wanted to get this idea. I had this idea up in my head earlier this week, and I'm so proud of myself. Late last week, I was so proud of myself. Hey, man, I got an idea for Tuesday's show already. And then Connie was lamenting the fact I wasn't going to continue the Young Earth Creationist stuff, but with that, you know, there are so many different ways that you could run with that. That just scratch the surface in one show. But what I wanted to do with that is I wanted to. Well, we can. Well, we can. It's just there's just so much there, and when you start, but I think the main idea was to take that long period of time mantra saying billions and millions of years and throw a wrench in it and just say, now hold up. And by showing that there is evidence for dinosaurs within just recently, when you start showing the blood evidence, for crying out loud, you show blood evidence from a Tyrannosaurus Rex, that should have people screaming, running to the hills to change the textbooks, but it didn't. And when they did publish it, they fired that Mark Armitage, that guy that found the Triceratops horn. He got fired from the laboratory I don't know if it's UC Berkeley or I can't remember which. It doesn't seem. I'm trying to find because he got a little big six-figure settlement out of the deal. Let me see here. Okay, I was wrong. Okay, I was wrong on the Berkeley thing. It was California State University Northridge is what it was, not Berkeley. Yeah. I want to make sure I want to make sure that I'm right on here. I don't want to be putting out bad information, but he was in charge of the microscope lab there, so they put it out. Can't be showing those pictures of the Philopodia and real dinosaur cells, for Pete's sake. Oh, 70 million years old. And you got to be stupid to be a professor, I guess. Okay, guys, I'm going to call it a night. Thank you for coming. Maybe part two will be Sunday. I'll have to take a look. Sundays, Easter. Yeah, you're probably. Okay. All right. Well, I'm calling it Sunday. Darcy, would you say? Ah, I could do that. Quit making sense. Okay, well, take a look at it. I'll have something up there for Sunday. All right, God bless you. You all have a great Easter, Passover, Sunday on Sunday. God bless you. See y'all then. All right, I can end my show here, Blog Talk Radio.